In the long and seemingly never-ending list of murderously villainous Jew haters, Balak certainly ranks pretty high on that list. The King of Moab made it his supreme mission to annihilate the entire Jewish people, every man, woman, and child. He employed horribly evil tactics to ensure our demise. He tried witchcraft, he tried adulterous seduction, he tried using dark magic emanating from the astrological interpretations of the constellations, all to wipe us off the face of the earth. In short, Balak was patently evil, even for Jew-hating standards. So it seems rather strange that such a ruthless person would be rewarded by Hashem with a reward so great it is essentially spiritually incalculable. The Gemara in Huria's Daf Yud Amud Beis says that because Balak, in his attempt to beseech Hashem to kill the Jewish people, brought karbanos and passionately pleaded his case before Hashem, he was rewarded with having a granddaughter named Rus, one of the greatest Jewish women of all time, and the eventual grandmother of David HaMelech, the greatest king in the history of our people. Now, why would a man who wanted nothing more than to see us all die get rewarded by Hashem for pleading for our deaths? What good were his pleas? And this phenomenon isn't limited to Balak. Moshe, while battling the traitorous Korach, davened earnestly to Hashem that he not accept Korach's prayers. Why did Moshe need to ask Hashem not to accept Korach's tefillos? Korach was on a rebellious campaign against Moshe, for which he would end up getting swallowed up by the very earth he was standing on. Hashem considered Korach's movement so bad that he ground the systems of nature to a halt and opened up the earth to its core to swallow the man alive. Why was Moshe concerned about the prayer of a man such as Korach? We again see this strange phenomenon in Parshas Maaseh. The Torah states that one who murders by accident must run for his life to the Ir Miklat, to the city of refuge, lest the victim's relative kill the murderer. The murderer remains in that Ir Miklat until the death of the Kayin Gadol, and then and only then may he leave. So the Gemara in Makos Daf Yud Amud Aleph says that the mother of the Kayin Gadol would go from time to time to the Ir Miklat and bring the murderer cookies to lessen the likelihood that he pray for the death of her son, the Kayin Gadol. She basically ensured that his living conditions were comfortable to the point that he wouldn't feel the need to pray for her son's demise. Now, why would this woman be afraid of the murderer's tefillos? Did she really think that the mighty and holy Kayin Gadol, in his full spiritual glory, would get affected by some outcast locked up in a prison city for killing someone? Did she really think that those tefillos could topple the strong and mighty Kayin Gadol? All these questions point to a very powerful answer. All these questions point to the power of an earnest prayer. Prayer uttered in sincerity can turn Hashem away from the stature of the person talking. It can overshadow previous deeds and external scenarios. The passion and meaning injected into those prayers, the fire burning in the soul of the one davening, can pierce the very heavens. Balak, in a horribly gruesome way, genuinely wanted the Jews out of the way. When he was praying to Hashem and offering him karbanos, he was doing so with 100% of his heart and his soul. He was as sincere as a man could be, and therefore, in a backhanded way, he developed a spiritual connection with Hashem. He was seeking Hashem out. He lifted his eyes towards the sky and relied on Hashem's help. He used every cell in his heart to sincerely plead with Hashem. He raised his arms to heaven and begged Hashem to help him, and hence he was rewarded. He recognized Hashem's presence. He understood Hashem's power. He thrust his burden on Hashem and therefore connected himself spiritually to his Creator. And therefore he, in turn, merited to have David come out of him. David HaMelech, who would teach the world how to truly connect to Hashem through prayer. Misha knew that Kairach was wrong. He knew that he was a power-hungry, misguided, and selfish person. He knew that all of Kairach's claims were worthless. Yet he also knew that Kairach was unquestionably sincere in his prayer to Hashem. That although making a gross and selfish miscalculation, Kairach still poured his heart out to Hashem. His victory over Misha was such a desperate need of his that he would plead from it from the depths of his heart. And therefore, Misha feared Kairach's prayers. He feared that his prayer was so sincere and heartfelt that they might actually be listened to. Moshe knew more than anyone the secret of prayer, sincerity, and Kairach had lots of it. A man who in one grievous moment of error lost his freedom and is now languishing in a prison city has one thing that the average person might not have. He has an aching heart that day in and day out pleads with Hashem to save him from his plight. He turns to Hashem every minute of his day with a soul on fire and praise. With nothing else left in his life, the only thing he resorts to is prayer. And therefore the words that pour out of his mouth ascend straight to the throne of Hashem, and the Kohen Gadol's mother was acutely aware of this. She was petrified of this. She therefore made it her business to make his life as comfortable as possible, and in turn limit his need to pray for the death of her son. For she knew that if he would in fact pray, those tefillos, those prayers would be infused with unimaginable spiritual energy powerful enough to climb the highest of staircases in heaven. There is nothing more cherished by Hashem than the sincere prayer from a soul aflame. Often, pressing and difficult predicaments in life are the ultimate catalyst for lighting our souls on fire. The prayers that such souls exude reach heights that words uttered by others in more calm environments would never reach. It's easy to stand in shul and to daven to Hashem when life is great and you're coasting along, but one runs the risk of having one's prayers ensnared by the dangerous world of monotonous word uttering with little to no meaning in the words coming out of our mouths. Sometimes the greatest match to light those words on fire is a challenge that Hashem places in our lives. And then suddenly daydreaming during davening is not an option. Suddenly the welfare of one's life rests on those prayers and the words take on an entirely new significance. Those words then burst into flames, ascending heavenward. Nothing is more powerful than the prayers of one in distress. One should not think that one's predicament or history or upbringing or plight will ever hinder the power of those prayers. This parsha proves the very contrary. Those tefillos aren't loved by Hashem despite one's scenario and plight. Those tefillos are loved by Hashem specifically because of it. My grandfather, Rav Mordechai Glick, a former rabbi, teacher, and psychologist, suffered in his later years from a painful case of dementia. Sadly, it was severe enough to prevent him from remembering his grandchildren's names or how to knot a tie, but not severe enough to blind him of the fact that he had the disease in the first place, and it pained him deeply. I used to spend Shabbos with him from time to time to keep him and my grandmother company. So one Shabbos afternoon, he came down from his afternoon nap and he walked into the kitchen and he wished me a good morning. He then made himself a cup of coffee and proceeded to put on his tallis and tefillin and began davening the Shacharis prayers for Sunday morning. He swayed and he shuckled and he sang and he cried and he stood firm as a rock while angelically saying Shmona Esrei with tears rolling down his cheeks. He prayed for his children and he prayed for his former students and he davened for his patients who are often too helpless to daven for themselves. He prayed for Klal Yisrael and he prayed for Eretz Yisrael and he prayed for all the childless couples that he had helped, all the marriages he had saved. He davened for all the special needs children in Hask and all the people he knew suffering in psych wards. He thanked Hashem for the wonderful gifts he had and requested that Hashem should give him health and give health to the aging mind that he had. And with that, he finished his prayer, put away his tallis and tefillin, and sat down to read a book. Did he say the correct tefillah? No. He said Shacharis for Sunday instead of Mincha for Shabbos. Was he wearing the correct attire? No. He was wearing tefillin on Shabbos when Halacha tells us not to. But did his tfilos ride on the wings of angels and pierce the heavens, bringing on heavenly tears? A resounding 100% yes, for those were tfilos of a broken man. Those were tfilos in their most sincere form. Those were tfilos of a man whose entire unadulterated connection to Hashem was entirely infused in those prayers. Such prayers burst through the gates of heaven and rest at the very feet of Hashem's throne. On May 16th, 2004, my father was walking up a flight of stairs and collapsed. He had a terrifying cardiac arrest and his heart stopped working completely. He was given a 5% chance of living out the rest of the day. 5% chance. 2 weeks later, he was released from the ICU and days later walked out of the hospital a completely healthy man. So a few days after coming home, he was taking a walk around the block and he bumped into our non-observant Jewish neighbor who, despite being Jewish himself, had less than pleasant views on Jews and Judaism. He ran over to my father and he said, "Dr. Eisenberg, you owe me a thanks." "Really? Why is that?" my father asked. The man looked at my father with a smile and he said, "For it's because of me that you are alive." "Really?" my father said. "How is that so?" The man continued. He said, "When I heard that you collapsed with a cardiac arrest, I whispered a powerful prayer to God for your recovery, and he must have been so utterly shocked, so utterly flabbergasted, so utterly surprised that I, of all people, prayed an actual prayer that he must have answered the prayer. How could he not? And seeing you today alive and well has only confirmed my suspicions that God must have listened to my powerful prayer." Tens of thousands of people davened for my father's recovery. Dozens of rabbis, Rosh Yeshiva, and holy people around the world pounded on heaven's door on his behalf. Hundreds of thousands of prayers emanating from pure and sacred lips were thrown God's way for him. Yet this non-observant, disgruntled man believed it was his prayer that kept my father alive. Incredible! What's even more incredible is that the man might even be right.